and welcome to the Soft Tattooed Millionaires Podcast. I'm Jack Austin, and like always, I'm joined by my older brother, Max. Max, how's it going?
Good. Glad to be on this podcast. You kind of had a hitch in your giddy up there, but I'm glad to be back in action. How are you?
I'm good. I apologize for the traffic noise, or if there's a little bit of echo. Recording wasn't going too well in the usual closet, so I'm out. So I'm out sitting on my bed right now, watching traffic.
It's been what, like 2 weeks since we've podcasted?
Yes.
And so much has changed in the world of American soccer. We finally have a technical director. We finally have a named new coach. We've got some clarity about who's going to be on the roster for the upcoming friendly.
Yeah, we know what's going on in Columbus.
Wait, what? Yeah. As per usual, we're still kind of waiting to hear about a lot of big things. So, yeah.
Crazy. Yeah, when I was like sitting down to start getting my notes ready, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have so much stuff to cover. And in a sense, we do. But in a more real sense, we don't at all. Because, yeah, like you said, none of the big questions have been answered. But let's get right into it. So this morning, I put out the call on Twitter. I said, we're going to be recording a pod today. And just kind of asked the general public what they would like us to discuss. And I got a couple of responses. The first one being, what should the starting 11 for the friendly against Bolivia be? Which is on Memorial Day, May 28th. So let's get into it.
I have to say, this was one of the most stress-inducing exercises I've done in some time. I don't know if it's because the roster is so open, because we're opening the gates to all these young players, that there's just a lack of clarity, or just because suddenly being on the spot and having to actually come up with a starting 11 is much harder than you think. And so I sympathize in a sense with Dave Sarakan. And a couple of notes I wanted to bring up before we even start talking about our starting 11s were that Sarakan came out and said that basically he said, quote, it's a no-brainer at this point to allow these matches to be served by a lot of young guys. They need games. Josie, Michael, Tim, Clint, you can go through a list of veteran guys. I know them well. We know them well. So it's not like we need to get them moving forward, et cetera. So basically he's just said the usual suspects aren't going to be involved for these friendlies, and it's going to be a bunch of the young guys. And it's probably – I mean, U.S. soccer has said something kind of like that, but not as directly as what Sarakan is saying here. And so it's interesting to note that. I wondered – how you read that coming from Sarakan. It seems like he's, you know, like really embracing this approach, and it's the most direct communication in some way we've gotten from U.S. soccer about it.
Yeah, I didn't read that until after I made my starting 11, so I immediately felt really stupid, but I decided to keep
it. Wait, does that mean that you were going to start Josie, Michael, Tim, and Clint?
Well, yeah, we'll see what happens. Because, I mean, there might be a 30-year-old on my team, but...
Oh, really? Me too. There's one 30-year-old on my team as well.
Oh, great. Yeah, so I felt kind of stupid after reading that, but I also think, you know, David Sarakan wants to position himself for the role long-term. He said he doesn't like being the interim coach. So I think maybe this is kind of an important piece of posturing. I think it endears him to the fans, which up until now he hasn't really done whatsoever. And I do think that the fans have more say in this than perhaps in the past, because the outrage is greater than we've ever seen and very real. But, you know, I don't know. He's not saying anything that anybody else wasn't already thinking. So,
yeah, I agree with that on both fronts. I know we're not supposed to agree because we're supposed to be a combative podcast that says all kinds of interesting things, where we draw lines in the sand and we fight and argue and all that kind of stuff. But I totally agree. It seemed to me like Sarakan's like, hey, guys, I'm cool. You know, look at me, kids.
Yeah.
And
it's like buying Tim Weah a beer right now.
Yes. So that's the sense I got from it too. It seemed to be a little slightly political in the sense that he was really positioning himself as the sort of like coach of the future in a sense. I appreciate though a coach being that upfront.
Yeah, any kind of honesty from anyone at U.S. Soccer Federation is like a drop of cool fresh water. It's delightful.
Yeah, and he did say, he goes on to say that that those guys, whom I love him just calling him by the first name because it makes it sound like a boy band, Josie, Michael, Tim, and Clint.
I mean, those names do. Those names. Yeah, that is excellent.
Those four are going to be in the, you know, they're going to, they're gonna factor into Gold Cup and that kind of stuff. So, but that for these games, they're not gonna be significant. So, yeah. Interesting. All right, so that's something I want to go over. And the general just absolute stress of this. How do you want to start off?
I mean, maybe we should start off by, sorry that I'm recording this next to a window. There's motorcycles, but I just want to start off talking a little bit about Bolivia. They're the 47th ranked team according to FIFA. And last year they beat Chile, they beat Argentina, and they drew with Brazil. But they're sort of like confounding. They've lost to Curaçao in the past, which actually are a better team than you might expect. But and maybe I just want to say real quick, this is a friendly that happens during the MLS season. So teams aren't obligated to release players. So it's going to be naturally sort of like more European heavy.
Actually, I heard the opposite.
Oh, really?
I mean, you're correct with the technical part of it, that that MLS isn't obligated to release them. But I think Sarakin said that that this friendly is going to be more MLS roster heavy, and that because it's in the U.S., and that the ones elsewhere are going to be maybe more like European roster friendly. Okay,
so like the Ireland friendly will be the. I don't like that. I don't like having the Euro squad and the domestic squad and them
me
not
either.
Yeah, and them not being integrated. That drives me crazy. You can't create cohesion.
Also, he's not thinking of the podcasters. What are we supposed to do? Yeah. Like, are we supposed to assume that he's going to just pick the more American located players? But at the same time, we also know that the two people that we know that are going to be on this roster that I have seen leaked are Pulisic and Josh Sargent. And so those are obviously people who do not live and work in the United States. So yeah. I don't know what to make of it at all.
That's baffling. You know, let's get into it. Let's just get into our starting 11. How do you want to do this? Do you want to do your 11 and I'll do my 11, or do you want to go position by position? Because I have a feeling that we're going to have a lot in common.
Yeah, let's start position by position. And cool. Obviously formation may change that, but let's start keeper and work our way forward, and then I think we'll sort things out from there.
Great.
Or yeah, something like that.
Yeah, that sounds good. So I guess I'll go first. So I would have said Zach Steffen for goalie, but I just have. I guess now what you just said throws a wrench into this, because you know what I was reading that is that perhaps it was going to be more European based. So it's probably most likely that Zach Steffen will get it. He got the last start, but I also wouldn't be surprised if Bill Hamid got it, even though he's not playing any games in Denmark. You know, he was on the bench for the last friendly, and I think, you know, if David Sarakin is going to give minutes to guys regardless of their sort of league form or their league minutes, I think Bill Hamid could get the start. I think what I would like to see is Zach Steffen. I really like watching him play. I thought he did a good job last time, too. There's really not that many options here. Like, Ethan Horvath hasn't played a game since October. But
the one that I think would surprise people, and it's actually my pick, is I want to see Alex Bono play. And he was called up, I think, for the extended January camp. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it was between Zach Steffen and Bono. And I thought, okay, we saw Steffen, but if this is really kind of a development thing, either we stick with Steffen because we want to see him kind of develop a relationship with the other defenders on the field, or we also give Alex like Bono like a chance because he's played pretty well. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of been on the periphery of this and seems to be in pretty good form and developing, you know, playing good competition, obviously, in CONCACAF Champions League. And so he's my pick for keeper, and curious to see, like, how he would look with the national team and with the other defenders. And I understand, like, that's a little risky. You don't just want to be like, hey, let's experiment with our keeper. But I am curious to see if he could handle it. And I also think that for keeper, we don't want to do this thing that we keep doing, which is that we like pick someone and then we stick with them, and then because they're the one who always is it, and we don't want to like upset the apple cart and want to keep the defense the same. But then what happens is that we like don't have any competition, and then we end up with, you know, Tim Howard and whomever like playing goal forever. And we don't have any of these other options in there. So I'd like to kind of inject some actual competition into the keeper position.
Yeah, I feel like the keeper position in the U.S. right now is at a lull, just because we're so used to having an embarrassment of riches between the sticks. But right now it really seems like, you know, our U.S. men's goalie aren't really getting the contracts in Europe, aren't really starting for big clubs. But hopefully it's a temporary thing. All right, so let's move on to defense. Do you want to do? Let's just go left to right. How about that?
Okay.
At left back, I have Anthony Robinson. So he led,
Yeah.
yeah, he led
Go ahead.
Bolton in assists for the first half of the season. Played 30 games for him. Most importantly, though, he's just so fast. He really likes to get forward. I think, I just yeah, I mean, I would just want to give him 90 minutes and see what happens. He's really young. I think he's only 20, right?
Yeah, something like that, 20 or 21. I mean,
Yeah.
we could, use the internet to look this up, but let's just keep talking.
Yeah. I mean, he had a great season for Bolton, and I think he should be rewarded with a full game. I mean, playing at the championship is playing at a higher level than the MLS. If it's a difficult campaign, Bolton almost went down. They didn't. He was a big part of that.
Yeah, I think this was actually one of the harder positions to pick for me because
Totally.
looking it's basically because looking at Viafania, who actually played really well in the last game, in
Yeah, I
some
really
ways
liked him, his last game too.
you want to reward meritocracy, or you want it to be meritocracy. You want to reward the effort and the merit of the players, and so I, don't want to send the wrong message to players like that, like Viafania, like, hey, you had a great game, and you were a leader on the field. You played really well, so we're going to give it to this younger guy to see what he's got. But granted, I think you're right that if given the context of like where this roster's at, that like I want to see Anthony Robinson, see what he can do, and give him like an actual full game at left back.
Yeah, is that who you picked as well?
Yep.
Awesome. All right, let's keep moving. So I, for the center backs, I kept the pairing the same as it was in, against Panama, just because I thought they looked really good. I have Matt Miazga and Cam Carter-Vickers. They look solid, and I think like maybe it's time to start developing a rapport. I think like with center backs, it's tricky. I'm trying to think of like a notable exception, maybe being like Sergio Ramos and and PK, who like have a great understanding at the national team level, but they do, and then but they play they don't obviously they don't play on the same team club team, and I want like Miazga and Carter Vickers. I do see them as the most likely future of like that back line going forward, but who knows? You know, in 2 months they'll probably be like some Red Bulls 2 startup that I'm like like oh my God, how did I not know? But what do you? I don't know. Who do you have?
All right, I'm going to pause this while I take some bread out of the oven, and then I'm going to surprise you with my picks.
What?
Yep, hold on.
Why wouldn't you do this? How's
Okay.
the bread?
The bread looks pretty good.
Okay. Who's playing center
Okay, so I think Tim Ream has played so well.
back?
It just seems like a waste if he doesn't get a chance to play center back when he's at like his at this level of form. And so for me, it just seems like
You gotta play the
this would
best
be an,
guy.
you got to play the I mean, that's not at all the strategy for these friendlies. But if possible, I would love to see him pair with a young center back, because right now he's our center back who's playing at the highest level, both in terms of the league and in terms of his ability. I think like in terms or like the team and the competition, he just seems to be firing in all cylinders. So I'd love to see him paired with Justin Glad or Matt Miazga. And I had a hard time choosing about between those two guys, but I think
I mean, maybe given the fact that Sarakin said that this is going to be MLS heaven, I think Justin Glad is. I think that's an
yeah,
interesting pick.
I think that's my feeling. Justin Glad has looked really good. I know Justin Glad can play both left and right center back. There, that may not be the right pairing because Tim Ream plays left, and I can't remember if Justin Glad. I was trying to find information on that, like if he sort of leans left. He's played both, but anyway. So, but that would be like that would be something I would like to see. Again, like that older experienced center back who's again playing at a super high level, who's having awesome games, playing with one of these young players, not just because it's like, oh, let me take you under my wing, but also because it is the kind of like, what do you want to call it, sort of like modeling that you want to have happen, where you're a young player like a Justin Glad or someone, and you're like, oh, this is a guy who went to the championship, and this is how he plays. Like, I know someone who's done that. I've played with someone who's done that, And granted, you know, like you're playing with all kinds of players in MLS if you're someone like Justin Glad, but if you suddenly have like the cell phone number and a connection with a player who's played in, at a different level in Europe, that's, you know, a, like an interesting connection to have.
So is that your 30-year-old?
Well, we'll see.
I mean, Tim Ream is 30.
So. Yeah, I know.
Okay, all right. So do we both have Yedlin for right back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish that we had another option, not just not because I don't like Yedlin. Obviously, he's playing pretty well, but I was like, oh, can we even consider Shaq Moore? And he really hasn't done enough to push Yedlin out of consideration here. I didn't really have a good sense of like, couldn't really find someone who was convincing enough at right back, unless you wanted to move someone like Tyler Adams to right back, to upset or to like, yeah, remove Yedlin from the lineup.
I kind of wish that we had more competition at that position, and it's not because I don't like DeAndre Yedlin. I just want there to be more competition in general around the U.S. When you really have one and only one realistic option, it's not good. His last game, I thought he was sort of like lost his head too easily. I think the fact of the matter is he's one of the senior players in the squad now, and I think it's time for him to lead by example.
Well,
I mean,
in your squad, man, in my
yeah, region. Yeah, okay, deal. All right, let's move on to central midfield. I think this is probably where we will differ the most.
What's your formation?
I'm doing the 4-3-3 as prescribed by U.S. Soccer.
As an official U.S. soccer fan, I have adopted the formation.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. So I have Michael Bradley as central defensive mid. Yes, and captain. I know, you know, maybe we thought we were done with him, but he's the best number 60.
Zarekin said no more Michael.
I know.
He called him by his name and said no.
In the same way that you like this idea of Tim Ream in camp, I think Michael Bradley is, I mean, he is the best number 6 we have. I think he was great in the CCL. He's been having a good season. I think that we can't underestimate the value of guys like Tyler Adams and Ja'Cory Hayes learning from him. And I think he would give us a solidity that we have been lacking. You know, I know that this maybe isn't a very popular opinion, but I think, yeah, he's my guy. Central defensive mid, Michael Bradley.
Okay, give me your whole midfield so I can see how it kind of.
Yeah, got you. So I have Michael Bradley, and then playing playing above him, I have Weston McKennie on the right and Ja'Cory Hayes on the left. So I've been really impressed with Hayes this year. I think his tracking and work rate is phenomenal. Seems like a smart player. Maybe not quite the hype train that Tyler Adams has, but so far this year in the MLS, I think Hayes has stood out a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Weston McKennie is just kind of obvious. So
I see what you're doing there. It's also really interesting to think about the position as a whole, because you've got Ja'Cory Hayes, whom we've both liked, Marky Delgado, whom we've both liked, but then, you know, and you've got Tyler Adams, and so there's actually a fair amount of depth here and some interesting some excitement there. There still lacks some like creativity, and that was what I was struggling with. So my midfield, I put Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, and Darlington Nagbe. And kind of hoping that, you know, Adams and McKennie are kind of like really doing some hard work defensively, and Nagby's able to create a little bit of a spark. And obviously went young, maybe not young enough with Nagbe, but that was my thought there. And I see what you're doing with Michael Bradley, but
yeah, I mean, what about a guy like Christian Roldan? I mean, he's pretty.
Every time I see Roldan, I'm kind of like underwhelmed with him. He's like a poor man's Darlington Nagbe.
Darlington Nagbe is a poor Nagbe, man's. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Every time I watch Nagbe, I'm like, I wish he were a little bit better. And I understand that people have some people really love Nagbe, and maybe people who watch him more closely than I do on a regular basis have some more insight than I do. But yeah, I kind of struggled with that. I just said that midfield had a lot of depth, but then still struggled to find like a little bit of something extra there.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying there. I think I when I made the central midfield, I also thought it was maybe a bit too defensive. I saw McKennie perhaps going forward. Well, I've seen you know, if, like he can go forward and find a pass. I know like Corey Hayes is, you know, this like dynamic playmaker, but I thought if we leave Bradley to sort of like sit in front of that back four, do most of the defensive work, and then distribute it up to Ja'Cory and West of McKennie, that kind of excited me. But I also thought it was maybe not the spark plug needed in the center of the pitch. But
I found an article that was like a list, or maybe it was a Reddit thread post that was a list of like 30 midfield U.S. men's national team players to consider, and I control F for the word creative and did not find it. And I was like, yeah, that sums it up.
Yeah, as opposed to like control F hardworking.
Yeah, work rate.
Tireless, yeah, exactly. That's great.
Box to box. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All of this. God. Well, we are athletic. All right, so wingers, Pulisic, I don't think we need to get into that, right?
Yep.
Who do you have on the left wing? This is really hard for me.
Yeah, I'm going with Kenny Seff.
Yeah.
Is that you too?
Okay. I just explain and we'll get to it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, his appearance most recently was not the best appearance. And
but people loved him after the game. He like everyone said he had such a great game. All the print media was, but it seems strange to me. I felt like I was watching a different game than other people.
Yeah. So I didn't love that, but wanted to kind of give him another chance and potentially on a roster with a touch more experience and a touch more dynamism up front to see kind of like how he plays.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, like this is a guy who is also like coming into the roster, like he's not even that, sorry, I'm stumbling and stammering here, but like think about him, like how many games has he played or trained with U.S. soccer? Not many. He's coming from like another country, from another league across the world. He's throwing in, like, is he going to jive suddenly with the U.S. men's national team and their, like, teen boy squad? Yeah. No, right? Like, give him a little bit of time if he is someone who we're interested in, you know, playing down the road, then I think he needs a couple games potentially to see, like, where he's at.
Yeah, it's sort of strange. I find him immensely likable. But I still don't necessarily, I'm still like not sold on starting him. I also just thought like I wanted to have a radically different roster than the last friendly. So I was hesitant to put Kenny Seff in there. But I think I didn't even actually pick a left winger because I was so confused. I kind of was hoping to convince myself to say something maybe more clickbaity like Tim Weah. But I mean, he hasn't gotten, I thought once PSG wrapped up the title, he would start getting these garbage time minutes, and he hasn't. At all, which is hugely problematic. But I think Kenny Seff probably has done enough to earn another shot. I also thought, you know, maybe Rubio Rubin, he's been playing off the bench for Tijuana, but they've been playing really well. They're in the playoffs for Liga MX right now. They beat Monterrey in the first round, so that's pretty impressive. Yeah, I think Kenny Seff probably. I'm just talking, but I'm not actually saying anything. Let's get to the real problematic. Can I give you a list of the last, how many? 12 strikers that have been called up by the United States?
Hit me.
Chris Wondolowski.
Okay.
Clint Dempsey. Josie Altidore. Josh Sargent. Christian Ramirez. Dom Dwyer. CJ Sapong. Jordan Morris, Juan Agudelo, Rubio Rubin, they have him as a forward, I guess. I mean, he could play up there, but we're using him on the wing. Novakovic and Bobby Wood.
Murderer's Row.
What is the opposite of a Murderer's Row?
Yankees right there.
It just highlights the complete lack of depth we have.
The complete lack of prime year depth we have at that position.
Yeah, that's true. Clint Dempsey's 35, Wondolowski's 35. Other than that, everyone's either in their 20s or Josh Sargent.
Yep. So who'd you pick? Put your money where your mouth is here.
I wrote this big long explanation as to why I wouldn't pick Bobby Wood. because of just how bad his last showing was. I thought he was the worst player on the field for the first half of the last friendly.
Oh, Jesus. Keep going.
But I'm not going to... I'll stop. I didn't have a good answer to this. For some reason, I wanted to say Dom Dwyer. That sounds so unexciting. I just like him, and I think he works really hard, which is like the most American thing to say. He'll like draw a penalty, he'll go down easy in the box, he'll win you a game when you don't deserve to, which I'm fine with, but it's...
That's the American way.
Yeah.
Winning a game when you don't deserve it, yeah.
I know, part of me wanted to say Sapong because he's actually good at hold-up play, as opposed to Jozy Altidore, who just looks like he should be good at it. But I don't know, man. I guess
you've given me six reasons not to pick any of the people that you've listed.
Yeah, I know. It's because I don't want to pick any of these people.
I am unapologetic about whom I'm going to pick. That's Clint Dempsey.
What?
Yeah. You know what? Like, I love the youth movement, but like, seriously, like, we don't have someone to play in the center, and Bobby Wood's not good right now, right?
Yeah.
And you know who we have? A goddamn American hero who's literally sitting on, you know, like his goal.
The record. Yeah, the record.
And you know what? We're doing? Like, we're being like such assholes. We're like, oh, we're going to play like Novakovic. We're going to play whomever. Like, we're going to play all these kids who, like, maybe they're decent, but come on. Like, let the guy play and get the record. Mm-hmm. Like, this game doesn't matter. And so, like, if we don't have a good, like, center forward to play,
put him in there.
Put him in there. Let him. He's going to score a goal, right?
I guess. Hopefully. That's the idea. When you say it, it's easy for me to believe that he'll score a goal.
Plus, like, here's the thing that I'm starting.
Someone who hasn't scored a single goal all season, but continue.
Okay. I mean, so, it's also a friendly, so you can do these things called substitutions.
Yeah. I mean, he scored a goal in Champions League, but, yeah.
So here's what I would do. I would start Deuce and let him play and, you know, give him a half where he's just playing his heart out or whatever, doing his thing. And then put Josh Sargent on, you know, for the second half.
And this has been so interesting. We chose old people.
Yeah, and here's the other thing that why I'm thinking this, similar to what I was saying about the center backs, like if your team doesn't have like some structure to it, and you know, like Bobby Wood is not going to be the target. He's going to be like the spearhead, the spear point where everything just falls apart right now.
Yeah, where his first touch fails him and the ball gets away from him. And yeah, I don't want to watch that.
Exactly. And so, sure, Clint Dempsey's not, you know, anywhere near peak. He's nothing, all that kind of stuff. But still, if you put him up there, he does give us some shape. And the super creative guys like Pulisic and I don't know if Seth is super creative, but, you know, these kind of folks have someone to aim at. And someone in the box that can score the goal when there's a goal mouth scramble and all that kind of stuff that right now, like if Bobby Wood was put 3 feet in front of the goal line, he would somehow like chip it over the whole, like chip it over the goal or something. It would just be like ridiculous. Like he's got such bad luck and slash whatever, like voodoo jinx going on with him. So it just, you know, like if I would say, like, to me, it's like, put Josie or Deuce up there or Josh Sargent are the only people I think that you can seriously think are actually going to be.
I would much rather have
the
Dempsey.
Most important position in some way on the field. Plus, like, think about the other friendlies that we've played recently. You know what we haven't done well? Score goals.
Yeah.
You know, so let's put someone who can potentially score some goals in that position.
Well, I guess I would rather have Dempsey than Altidore, and it's because we have the attacking threat from the wings and Dempsey can find a pass. That's like the ability that more sells me on the idea of Dempsey rather than him, you know, his like being able to shoot on like a quick turn. But is this argument like put him in?
I know. Maybe I'm playing up his ability to score goals and saying that, oh, you're going to put someone who can actually score goals. But right now, like Bobby Wood isn't scoring goals.
I'm just happy that you didn't say Jordan Cibecu. So everything's fine.
So you still haven't told me who you would play.
Nobody. I would just put on an extra central midfielder, see what happens. I don't know. Like, no striker impresses me right now.
I hear you, but the team needs some structure and some shape, and like, let's actually like play well. Let's get some people on there who can score some goals or do some cool things.
All right.
I'm not like super, you know, like said about it, getting Tim Ream on there, and it may be a lot to get him to fly from England or whatever, right? That kind of thing. But you know, I think having someone in the center who's like not like a, oh, we're gonna give this to Bobby Wood so that he can get back into form. Like, we shouldn't be nursing someone along. We just need to like score some goals and have some fun.
Yeah, I want to move on from this. So,
all right.
Dave Sarakin said he wants the job. But recently, But recently, Rob Stone tweeted a list, the short list, apparently, for the manager position of the U.S. men's national team. So let me say this in a way that makes sense, because that was really jumbled. Basically, Rob Stone tweeted this list of everyone that the USSF is looking at, and it was Tab Ramos, Tata Martino, Jesse Marsh, Greg Berhalter, Brad Friedel, Juan Carlos Osorio, and Peter Vermes. What are your first thoughts when you hear that list?
Well, it's a short list with seven names on it.
Mm-hmm. Not that short.
Yeah, it's not that short.
Yeah.
A lot of the people that you would think, and then some people are missing from that list. So I want to ask you, who were you surprised not to see on the list?
I haven't even considered this. I guess I was surprised not to see a single European-based coach. And not even like a club level, but like an out-of-work or potentially like someone who coaches the national team right now but maybe will be out of a job after the World Cup, or someone who their contract is expiring after the World Cup. It was all MLS and Juan Carlos Osorio. And that is a truly limited scope. I wonder if it's like we've been burned before with Jurgen Klinsmann and we're afraid to take this risk. But it's not a risk that I want to stop taking. I'm not saying we need like a European friendly coach or we don't need like someone who has like years and years of experience abroad, but I at least want us to be considering it. Like, this is a one mentality list. Like, this list is representative of a very small percentage of what's out there.
Yeah, I think that's an accurate way to summarize the whole list. And I think the one name that obviously, as you said, isn't like that is like, which one of these things is not like the other? It's Juan Carlos Osorio. And it's also like, he's the most unavailable of these people in a sense.
Yes.
Literally, he has got a better job right now.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else right now has a worse job than this. Yeah. And so for everyone else, this is like an aspirational job, or like this would be the next step for them. Whereas for Juan Carlos Osorio, it'd be something like he would have to be sold on it. And he's not available. So like, as you said, like maybe there's some names out there who like former European coaches or former, you know, South American coaches or whatever, who might be a nice fit for this.
Mm-hmm.
who are either like, you know, club level coaches or currently unemployed or something like that. But yeah, so it seemed to be that they're missing that kind of name from this list. But obviously, too, the big one that jumped out to me was not having Greg Vanney's name on there.
Yeah,
and that just seemed like I assumed that any list of finalists would have that one on there, and surprised to see some of the other people on there ahead of him, especially
Brad Friedel.
Yes.
Why? What has he done?
Yeah, that seemed to me like a kind of like an old, you know, U.S. soccer chum kind of situation where
he was an assistant coach for Tab Ramos with the U-20s. But I don't know, like, I don't understand what he's done in his career to warrant a national team job.
As a player, you know what I mean?
It's so crazy.
Yeah.
It's also like, you know, this is just like a tweeted out list, so take it with a grain of salt. But to say like Friedel ahead of somebody, I guess let's put like a European name out there and say like someone like Marcelo Bielsa or Bielsa. I can't say his name. Sorry, Bielsa, Bielsa. Yeah, God, I need to stop saying that. It's just like if someone is like stoned listening to this, they have just like shit their pants. But yeah, like just seeing his name on there is, and nothing against Brad Friedel as a human being, but
Yeah,
this
he makes
highlights a
pretty
lack of
good dad
ambition.
jokes, and he has a giant head, so there's something to like about
Like
Brie.
even the refs aren't doing that well. Like I don't under
No.
like I don't get it. I don't get it. Like what did they see in their like 4-2 loss to the Montreal Impact? They're like, yep, that's our man.
Okay, so let me ask you then. First question, do you think this list is accurate? How accurate do you think it is?
I think all these people have been considered. Whether this is the short list, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think that if they wanted to give Tab Ramos the job, maybe they would have given him it over Dave Sarokin.
Well, I think the wrinkle to that is that Tab Ramos may not have accepted an interim job. Thinking it's sort of like it's a one end or it's a dead end kind of thing to be an interim coach, because it's like, okay, great, I stopped working with the youth, and then I suddenly am in this interim thing where they're just gonna hire a bigger name than me, and then what happens? I go back to this. It's like that sucks.
Yeah, I just don't see him being seriously considered. But maybe, but if Friedel is being seriously considered, then yeah, why not Tab Ramos?
Okay, so yeah, I agree. I don't think it's completely accurate, but let's assume it is accurate. Who are the top two people on the list for you?
Oh, can I actually say one more thing about I'm actually very surprised to see Jesse Marsh, and that's not because of him as a coach, but it's because the U.S. interviewed Ali Curtis, who didn't see eye to eye with him at Red Bulls. And so it's kind of like when Arsenal hired the former Dortmund head of scouting, and like by doing so it meant the club would probably not go after Thomas Tuchel in the future. So that's like when I saw Curtis interviewing for the GM job, it made me think, okay, so Marsh is pretty low on their list because they wouldn't be seriously considering this guy for a job if Marsh were a top even three candidate. So just real quick, but I'm sorry, what was the question you asked before I
So
went back?
who, so I'm thinking about it this way. Who are your top names on the list? Who would you be excited about if they named from this list?
I think I would be excited by Tata Martino, but I don't think that his job at Atlanta is finished yet. Like, even if they go on this year and win it all, I don't think that like Atlanta has made its case as like an institution of American soccer after 1 year of success. And I think Tata is a success because he's pulling international players, right? Obviously, you can't do that for a national team job. I like him as a coach. I'm a big fan of what Atlanta is doing, but I kind of want Atlanta to keep doing what they're doing. And I would think I would like it if he were a coach, but I'd also be kind of bummed out. I think Berhalter is someone I would be happy with. I mean, it's sort of because the system he plays with and has been playing with for like the last 4 years, I think would make a lot of sense for the U.S. men's national team. Yeah, I'll just stick with those two. What about you?
I mean, Juan Carlos Osorio, obviously, I would be thrilled with, but we wouldn't even find out about that for a long time.
Yeah. All right. We didn't mention Peter Vermes. Any thoughts on him?
Yeah, he's an interesting name too. I mean, he's the longest tenured MLS coach. He's got experience as a technical director as well as a coach. You can see like the attraction there, like really knowledgeable, really experienced in America. But still not someone I would be excited about, but maybe that's, I don't know, maybe that's my own.
I think we're underestimating him. Yeah. I would be happy with Vermes. I'd be happy with Berhalter. I would actually be happy with four of the, actually, I'd be happy with every one of these except for Tab Ramos and Brad Friedel.
I guess the top, like Tab Ramos, if he hadn't said kind of like that sort of macho American stuff, I would be happier with him.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, happy might be strong, but I would be open. You know,
I mean, he seems to be a good coach. He seems to be a good like youth coach, and like he's got, for what it's worth, it seems like he's kind of been like, hey, this is the style and the structure we play, and he established that with it, like with his under 20 team, and now it's sort of almost like a U.S. soccer total thing, like the top to bottom,
Yeah.
everyone's playing this 4-3-3, and but you know, like that's maybe that's, you know, like just what it looks like from the outside, and that actually there's a movement within U.S. soccer to do that, those sorts of things, and he's not really involved with that, making that
Yeah.
decision. But it seems like he's been consistent, he's been organized, people have developed, he's been a good coach, all that kind of thing. So, but these other people have more experience at a higher level.
Yes. All right. Let's move on to the final topic. So, our friend Adam Bells of Scuffed trolled us into talking about ProRel today. It's not something that we've ever talked about on the pod, so I guess maybe it's time to get it out of the way.
Yeah, lay your cards on the table.
Yeah,
Where are you
so
standing on this?
I don't wake up in the morning thinking that ProRel is going to be the solution to all of our problems. I long term, I would love for that to happen. Do I think that it needs to happen tomorrow in order for us to do well in international tournaments? No, not at all. I think the biggest question that I have is that 10 USL teams are owned by the MLS, 11 USL teams are affiliated with MLS teams with sort of varying degrees of financial and structural overlap. So out of the 32 teams in total in the USL, only 11 would be able to be promoted and relegated in the current structure. So if you sort of implement complete financial and structural independence for all of these USL teams in order for the ProRail system to be implemented, I worry that really a lot of these teams are going to go out of business. They're not putting people in the stands. They don't have a lot of support. MLS may stack the cards in favor of, the club ownership and all that, and maybe they shoot themselves in the foot by not taking risks, or maybe, I mean, maybe Americans are just shitty sports fans. Like, ProRail also works in other countries because soccer's been around and more relevant for a longer time. People have developed ties to these teams, so I don't think ProRail tomorrow is a good idea. I think as soccer develops, yes, maybe it can be an ultimate goal, but I feel bad because I feel like such a Neanderthal because it's sort of like a given that if you care about soccer in the United States, you should just say ProRel tomorrow. Let's do it.
Yeah, I feel you. I don't know if it's my own like sudden like waning and waxing like weird conservatism that just pokes its head out somehow, but like I do feel like less certain that ProRail is it's a great thing as I get older. But and for some of the reasons that you shared, though, I thought you shared them elegantly and more informed than I would be able to articulate. But the other part of it too is that the U.S. is just different, you know. We
Yeah.
kind of lose our mind a little bit when we talk ProRail, and I think, you know, honestly, I could be convinced either way. But like, you know what we have got the best at in the world? Like basketball players. You know,
Yeah.
we've got the best at in the world? You know, American football players. Those sports
Yeah.
don't have ProRail.
Yeah.
And you know, like the NBA has created this D League, and we've got the best baseball players. Obviously, we've got minor league systems. And those sports just have more money to build that sort of infrastructure. Or in the case of, you know, the NFL, they just sort of like siphon that infrastructure off the NCAA. But, you know, like there are other ways of developing professional sports. And I don't think we necessarily have to feel that we need to copy a structure and to force a structure into a country whose geography is so different.
Yeah.
And especially in a situation where like the money isn't there. If the money is there first, it's easier to do things. But you know, like to change a structure or to do that kind of thing, it's just going to cost money to a league and to other things that right now isn't making enough money to do that. And I understand the reasons why. You know, ProRail increases the marketing value of the league. It adds all this like drama for the relegation and the promotion. I'm also not like entirely convinced it would flip a switch and work, and suddenly there would be like a, you know, like a Rogers Park Sporting Club here in Chicago where I live that would be, you know,
Yeah.
feeding up into whatever, you know, Chicago Fire
Although, like
situation.
you saying that makes me excited. Like, I would love to see the Milwaukee Torrent get a chance to climb up the leagues. But yeah, I hear you. I mean, this might, like, I think also we sort of look at England and Spain and Germany and, I mean, everywhere else and say, oh, they're competitive because pro rel. I think they're competitive because soccer's been the most popular sport in those countries for over 100 years, you know?
But, yeah, and there's money and prestige there.
Yeah, like the media rights are also as such that it trickles down to, like, smaller clubs. If I think that's something we need to look into. And like, first and foremost, we need to know what the fuck is going on with the MLS financially. There's sort of no transparency there. So I need to know if the MLS is actually making money or losing money. You know, because if they're losing money and like, oh, we're going to do pro rel, that's a really bad idea. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be like debt pro rel. Yeah. Like, all right, the team below us gets to take on 25% of our debt after the season.
Yeah. I mean, when I was talking to Andres Davi of the Milwaukee Torrent, who used to work for Bayer Leverkusen, he was explaining to me, you know, when a team gets relegated, 80% of the staff gets fired. So I don't think a whole lot of MLS clubs could survive that right now. And I mean, like, I believe in the MLS. I believe in soccer as like in the future of the United States. But as things stand right now, it does not make any sense to me.
It's also, I think, to complicate this even further, if we did pro rel, you would get the, like, I don't think MLS could really do it with its current financial structure at all. I mean, it would just you would have to just rewrite all the way the league worked, like the limits on spending and stuff like that. Because, like, imagine right now, if you're in Toronto's position where you're like at the bottom of the table or near the bottom of the table, and you just like lost the finals game of CCL, and then one of the reasons you lost is just because you didn't have enough depth on, or the reason that you're at the bottom of the table is you just don't have enough depth on the roster, right? And so, like, to actually be in a like a pro rel kind of thing, where in a at the high level league where you need to have like a really deep roster, like, teams have to be spending a lot more money to kind of play that game as well as this like international competition game that they want to do. I mean, like, ideally, if you're Toronto, you would have like three or four other like high level players, and you'd be able to afford that if all the money was there for all this kind of stuff. But right now, like, Toronto isn't able to do that.
Yeah, I think the future of soccer in America looks a lot more like baseball than it does like soccer abroad. I think it's minor leagues, with less traveling, because so much of the cost of running a team is, you know, the fact that the United States is huge and you're shuttling players across this massive country every week for a game. But if it happens in the future, I think that'd be great. We don't. Nobody except the people who work at MLS know anything about the finances of MLS. So we don't know enough to say one thing definitively.
Or any time that someone has explained the finances of MLS to me, it has been so confusing. I have not been able to hold it into my brain.
Yes,
it's like a Zen koan where that's like, what is the sound that one hand makes when clapping?
Yeah,
it's like, what is the sound of a targeted allocation money? I have no idea.
Yeah, if SUM falls in the woods, do they fall on top of MLS and USSF? It's really baffling. And everything that I've read about the finances, I can just as easily go online and find an article that says the complete opposite. So it is tricky. By no means are we like anti-pro rel. I don't think that we're sold on it. I'll keep an open mind. I don't think it's necessary.
I think pro rel is like an awesome idea for a way to run a sports league. Mm-hmm. I don't think that, my gut tells me that it's just, it would be part of a huge overhaul of soccer, which I'm not sure like we are would be able to do right now. But
I don't think we'd survive.
I love it. So, yeah.
This is probably too like reductive, but just look at how many people come to MLS games. Look at those stadiums. Turn on the TV. Every stadium, apart from, you know, Atlanta, is more than half empty. Whatever the MLS wants to say about like the attendance, they're lying, and that should be said.
How did we both end up being so anti-pro rel suddenly?
Yes, yeah, we started. I've never asked you about this.
We started this conversation by saying that we both. How did we put it? That
we're open to it. That like long term, we would like it.
Yeah,
and now it seems like we're talking ourselves up into a frenzy.
Yeah, I think maybe we're both reacting a little bit to the fervor we see about ProRail.
Absolutely. It's like the band Fish. I don't care about Fish. I don't think about Fish. I have like what if I hear that I couldn't tell you a single of their songs. But when I meet people, when I meet fish heads, I get so mad, you know? But
It's the certainty that they're listening to good music. It's like, no, how can you be so sure?
Yeah, so Pro Rail is definitely like the Fish of American soccer. So no, I shouldn't say
Would if there were a way where someone's like, oh yeah, this will work financially, would you switch to ProRail?
yeah, I guess. I
Yeah,
mean,
I would.
yeah.
I think yeah, for me it's just concern about the finances of it and whether or
Yeah.
not like we can afford to do it, whether or not like how it's even possible given the way MLS is structured,
Yeah.
all that kind of stuff.
I think a lot of the ProRail argument in the MLS comes from the fact that expansion is a bidding war and it overlooks communities where there's a pre-existing soccer fandom and a really
Yeah.
and I think that's where and that is legitimate. Expansion should be based on pre-existing teams who deserves it most from a soccer standpoint.
How about this? What if there was just pro and
What's
like
the
we,
cap?
so the cap would be, or no, here's how it would work. Like it would basically be like the way, so it'd be like USL, and then like whatever team wins USL that's not affiliated with MLS gets to be in it, or the whatever team has the best attendance and or the best record over 3 to 5 years.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
And so then you're like incentivizing people to like grow their team in all these different cities, and then you're like, then it becomes like this sort of like American Idol sort of thing where, oh yeah, Cincinnati crushed it, they're getting promoted, they've like over the last 3 years they've been awesome.
I mean, so you'd have like, so Nashville is already in, so you'd have like Louisville, Cincinnati, Indy, Charleston,
Yeah.
Harrisburg, Pittsburgh, Tampa, Las
And it would open the
Vegas.
door to whoever wanted to like just start a team, you know, like
Yeah.
if like your guy Davi in Milwaukee is like, all right, yeah, let's take it up a notch or whatever. If, I mean, granted, it'd be limited by the number of teams in USL or whatever, but nonetheless, something like that could.
Well, I think we've actually done a pretty good job explaining ourselves. I'm sure if anybody listens to this, we'll get taken down and called all sorts of horrible things, but I'm happy with this. I say as I'm, and I'm sure like when I'm editing the audio, I will be like, Jack, you fucking moron.
I'm not actually conservative, guys.
Yeah, nor am I.
Yeah. How about before, let's end on a positive note. I haven't I did some fun stuff that I think that I want to trivia you with.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So I was reading Mike Petke's Twitter.
Yes, he
And
follows us.
yeah, so what a guy.
Yeah.
So I've got three Mike Petke trivia questions for you. Mike Petke said, which cover song is better than the original? A, The Man Who Sold the World by Nirvana. B, Proud Mary by Tina Turner. Or C, Hurt by Johnny Cash.
Well, they're all true, I think. Which did he say? I want to say Nirvana. That just feels true. I don't know why.
That is correct.
Awesome. Also, Mike Pecky. Fuck yeah, dude.
Number two, Petke recently compared Justin Timberlake's halftime performance at the Super Bowl with Prince's. Who did he say was better?
Oh, Prince.
He said Justin Timberlake.
Oh, never mind. Good God, Mike. Come on. You got you, what? I mean, like, seriously? Come on.
I know.
Ugh.
You can't let your own taste of music blind you to Mike Petke's total narcissism.
But he's like a guy who loves Nirvana Unplugged, clearly, and just okay, whatever. Okay, one more.
And the last one is this is what he wrote in his tweet. Quote, crazy being in SLC, rocking out with my New York man. And then he named his New York man. Was he talking about Jay-Z, Puff Daddy, Billy Joel, Neil Diamond, or Tony Bennett?
What? New York man?
Yeah.
This New York man. Okay, so I
Like
don't.
he's at a concert and he's like,
Oh, he's
oh,
at. So I thought this was
awesome.
like. Okay, I thought he was like
Oh, sorry. Yeah,
hanging out with
I
them.
should
Okay,
not say that.
sorry.
He's like,
Yeah.
he's not like sitting on his porch with Jay-Z or Tony Bennett or anything like
Okay,
that.
rocking out to my new with my New York man. I don't think it's Jay-Z because I don't think Jay-Z's touring right now. Maybe he does have shows. I don't know. Tony Bennett probably always is playing at Billy Joel. You know, he's got his standing gig at Madison Square Garden. What was the other option?
So it was Jay-Z, Puff Daddy, Billy Joel, Neil Diamond, or Tony Bennett.
Neil Diamond is not from New York, right? Neil Diamond's. Oh, shit. I don't know. I'm gonna say Puff Daddy for some reason.
Okay, actually, so hold on, I've got to look this up because I forgot it.
What?
I didn't write down the answer to this one. And I
What?
totally, I was, okay, hold on. Okay. Yes, I've got it. On November 29th, 2017, Mike
You're going
Pecky tweeted
back.
out, what's that?
You're going way back.
Yeah,
I'm on his Twitter right now, too.
I did some research. He tweeted, crazy being in SLC, rocking out with
Of
my
course,
New
it's
York
Billy
man,
Joel.
Billy Joel.
Well,
Such a cop.
I mean, he's a dad, so. All right, that's a good note to end on. I'm not even going to say anything snarky about Billy
It is a particular kind of person who
Yeah.
is into Nirvana, Billy Joel, and Justin Timberlake.
Yeah, and that person is white.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us. It's a bit of a long one today, but since we hadn't recorded in a couple of weeks, you'll forgive us. If you want to get in contact with us, softtattoomillionaires@gmail.com, @softtattoofc. Thank you so much for listening.
And Mike Pecky, for listening, give us your Spotify station.
Yeah, please. All right.